2012 at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Written by Betsy Allister, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight, where listeners like you produce your own program. This airtime is a free service offered to those interested in sharing their knowledge, talent, and passions. This is also a space to audition new programming. Opinions expressed in Open Journal may not reflect the views of the Pacifica Foundation, its staff, board, or volunteers. Information shared on Open Journal should not take the place of appropriate professional consultation. Now it's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight here on KPFT Houston.
Good morning and welcome to Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston downtown. We're going to spend this morning lying through our teeth, so to speak, to celebrate the upcoming annual Liars Contest sponsored by the Houston Storytellers Guild on Saturday, April 14th. Now, we're not promoting sociopathic behavior, but rather imagination. You know, creative storytellers have always had a license to amplify, to stretch the truth, making the heart beat a little faster, the cricket jump a little higher, and the kid we beat up a little bigger. And when all the creative stops are pulled, topics like, what makes the Grand Canyon truly grand? I have the answer. And why the only tree in Amarillo was planted in my front yard? Why my family is not genealogically friendly? And how my dad was born in a sewer, not to mention the tortoise-throwing capital of the world, surface as samples of past competitive stories that were ingeniously laced with hilarious lies. Now, I'm going to provide the particulars about the Liars Contest in just a bit, but I want to jump into the fun as quickly as we can. Today's feature teller, Jay Staley, has been on Storytime before, in fact, very recently. And being a two-time winner of the Liars Contest, it's clear that you can't believe anything he says. Now, Jay has appeared numerous times as a feature teller at the Tejas Storytelling Festival and has written two collections of stories, Short Tales, Tall Tales, and Tales of Medium Stature, and Think Rather of Zebra, dealing with aspects of poverty through story. Jay's dogged commitment to using storytelling to connect not only our community, but communities around the world is inspirational to anyone fortunate enough to know him. Jay, good morning and welcome back.
Good morning, Hank. It's good to be here.
And this is great. This is going to be fun. This is going to be fun because we're not going to tell the truth at all, except that you're Jay and I'm Hank. And
all right. Are here.
And Laura's out there and we're in the radio. Okay, good. That's the truth. Now, tell us about this first story that you've got.
Well, Hank, you know, I was reading in the Chronicle the other day an article about spring break revelers and how they've been encouraged to change the manner in which they revel or more carefully shape how they report their travel stories as a result of Facebook and other social media. Mm-hmm. These days, all it takes is a digital camera or a smartphone and a little impaired thinking, and the resulting images shared through social media can ruin a person's future. So young people are discovering the value of a good tale for the purposes of masking the truth. Or they're finding out what happens if they fail to cover their occasional indiscretions with a good story. So I was going to tell a story about my last summer. I was in Scotland last summer, and I was in this little village. It was the time of day I was looking to quench my thirst. I found a public house one afternoon, and I sat down at this bar for a pint of Scottish ale. And I was admiring the quality of the bar itself. It was this beautiful wooden bar. And as I was admiring the bar, I looked down to the end of the bar, and there was a fella down there at the end of the bar. He looks up at me, and he says, "My name's McCrary." He says, "I built this bar with my bare hands. I cut the tree. I hewn the lumber. I put the bar together. I sanded her all down. I put 5 coats of varnish on the bar. It's a beautiful bar. No one comes into this pub without asking us to this bar and admiring the quality of it." "Yep, but do they call me McCrary the Bar Builder?" And then he took a sip of his beer. He sighed. He looked across me. He looked out through the doorway into the front of this pub, and there was a stone wall out there. And he says, you see that stone wall out there? So I built that wall with my bare hands. I quarried the stone. I hauled it in here with a wheelbarrow. I took one stone at a time and I layered them in there, making sure that they fit perfectly with the stone beneath and all the stones beside. And I built that wall up so it will last forever. But do they call me McCrary, the wall maker? Well, he took another big long draft of his beer and he gave another big sigh. You could tell he was proud of his work. At that point, he'd looked out through the window there of the pub, and I followed his eyes as he glanced across the village to the edge of the town. And there was a big barn sitting down there. And he said, "You see that barn at the edge of the village? I built that barn with me bare hands. I used the architecture of the wall. I used my work on this barn, and I went out there, and I put the four walls on that barn, and then I got some beams and some joists and put them up there for the roof, and then I hewn the planks and put them on the roof. If a man were to walk into that barn in the middle of the day and look up at the roof from the inside, not one sliver of sunlight would come through. Says no one comes into this village without admiring that barn and the architecture and the skill of the craftsmanship. No one. But do they call me McCrary, the barn builder? No. He says, but just one time, let one person see you get a little too intimate with a goat. So I'm sure our listeners this morning can see the necessity sometimes of a good story to mask the truth or to drive home a point.
Thank you. Thank you, Jay. You are listening to Nothing But Lies on KPFT's Storytime with storyteller Jay Staley, and I'm your host, Hank Rubicek. You know, let's talk about masking the truth for a moment, a little bit more. My son's now 25, and he probably doesn't remember this story. But when he was 5 years old, I took him to Lion Country Safari, this outdoor strange animal park in Lake Worth, Florida. Actually, I took him there several times. But I took him there, and we're pulling in, and he's sitting in the back seat doing whatever he's doing. And I take a look at the prices, and I'm thinking, my God, we can go to Lion Country Safari, or I could buy a Victorian home. Which one will I do? Pretty pricey. But there was a huge difference between being 5 years old and 6 years old. Okay. Now, he had just turned six. He had just turned six. And I, of course, talked myself into the fact that he was really five. So when I rolled down the window and the gentleman asks, "How old is your son?" I said, "He's five. I want the cheaper rate." And my son just blurts out of the back seat, "Daddy, you know I'm six. I just turned six. You're not telling that man the truth." I said, "Josh, be quiet. Sit down. Be quiet." I turn red as a beet, and I turn to the gentleman, and he says, "You don't know how old your son is?" I said, "It just slipped my mind. It just slipped my mind. You don't remember how old your son is?" And he just smiled and said, "Okay, we'll call him five today." And that was it. So I thought to myself, you know, it's been said, at least from a psychological standpoint, conventional wisdom, psychologists long held that young children learn to lie effectively between 2 and 4 years old. And I don't know if that's true. I think maybe they learn best from those lies told by their parents. People like me. Right? But you know, the ability to lie is essential in storytelling. And to me, it seems a lot harder to lie than to tell the truth, because not only do you have to make up a lie, but you have to watch to make sure people believe you. Right? Now, you're a good storyteller. You're a great storyteller. And Jay, why do tellers really need to lie effectively? What do they have to do, I should say, to lie effectively in a story? What do you look for in the audience? How do you know it's working? How do you know your lie is working?
Well, that's a good question, and I think that the first thing you have to do is you have to build a case for the fact that what you are saying could be the truth, could possibly be the truth.
So you have to believe it.
You have to. It has to be believable, at least in the beginning, and then I think you have to sort of ease off into the edges of what might be unbelievable. You kind of go You go briefly into these, you just sort of put your foot into that, and then you step into it, and you just keep pulling the story farther and farther into that realm of unbelievable.
Right.
So that you've pulled folks in, and then you've set that point in their mind as to, was that the truth? Now, was that last thing the truth? So I like to kind of mix my lies carefully with parts of the truth, or you can just be bold and just start out outrageous from the beginning.
Well, you know, but on a very serious level, that's what fairy tales are. That's what fantasies are. They're not true, right?
That's
true.
Yeah.
Most of us have not seen castles. We haven't seen wicked witches outside of our family. We haven't seen the sorts of things that would smack of a glass slipper, or we haven't seen Humpty Dumpty fall off a wall. Those are all images that we create in our minds. And they're good images. They're smart images because they enhance us both affectively and cognitively. We create pictures of things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Einstein said it best. I think he said that imagination is more important than knowledge because it really does serve as a tremendous seed for learning. And I think that's how we have to view this. So when we use the word lie, just so our listeners know, we're not using that in the most literal, pathological sense of the word. We're talking about the fact that stories have to be amplified in order to work.
Yeah.
You have to create that sensory skill in your own mind.
Yeah, and I think there's another piece of it, too, is that lots of times we look at our audience or the people that we're with, and we want to make them happy. We want to tell them the things that they want to hear.
Right.
And as storytellers, one thing that happens is your audience wants to be entertained. They want to stretch their imagination.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of drawn to expand on the truth because you're wanting to tell them the things they want to hear.
And I think that's a very good point. And also, too, when you have stories like Pinocchio, right? Stories mm-hmm. that are lies about telling the truth. You have a wonderful paradigm. You have to be creative in order to help people understand why the truth is so important. Some of these cliches like liar, liar, pants on fire, being the scholar that I am, of course, I decided to do some in-depth research here, being a little facetious, and I looked up the notion of where liar, liar, pants on fire originates. It comes from the William Blake poem. This is according to the New York Times, and I just want to read a part of this. It's called Deceiver, Dissembler. Deceiver, dissembler, your trousers are all right. From what pole or gallows shall they dangle in the night? Then I'll jump down. What infernal serpent has let you his forked tongue? From what pit of foul deceit are all these whoppers sprung? Deceiver, dissembler, your trousers are all right. From what pole or gallows do they dangle in the night? Do you have a favorite story that just is a total myth that you just love and that you've honestly believed to be the truth after a period of time? In other words, a story that's so wild that you can't believe that it isn't true. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You know, you talked about myth. I've been working on the story, the Arthurian story of Percival. And you know as you hear the story that it's really based in legend. There's really nothing that could be true about so much of it. And yet it is so true as a myth. It rings so true with me that as I tell it, I know it has to be so.
Yeah. You really do have to buy into it. But I think that to an extent, when you think about most stories, they're not really pure lies. They're really not. They're really amplifications. They're amplifications more than anything else. There has to be some seed of truth. For example, one of my favorite films, Finding Neverland,
mm-hmm.
right, with Johnny Depp. He takes a look at the kids, and he realizes when they're jumping on the beds, ready to go to sleep at night, that it's not a good idea for kids to go to bed because they wake up a day older. So he imagines them flying out the window, escaping from a sleep-like state. Now, that's a little wild, but it's true. When you go to bed, you wake up a day later, and that's
a day closer to being in the adult world and dealing with the adult troubles and worries.
And who really needs that, right?
Uh-huh.
But, you know, let's get back to reality, because reality is Laura telling us some sort of flawless, perfect, absolutely truthful report on traffic.
Well, I'll try. There's a three-vehicle accident on 45 Gulf Freeway northbound at Lockwood. Two main lanes are affected. I believe that to be true. And there is slow traffic on 59 East Tex Freeway southbound from Quitman to 45. Travel time is almost 6 minutes at 25 miles per hour. And there's also very slow traffic on 59 Southwest Freeway northbound from Williams Trace to Willcrest. There was an accident there that has been cleared. And the current temperature is 63 degrees. Skies are clear, humidity 78%, and today will be sunny with a high of 84 and a low of 60 degrees. Please stay tuned after the community spotlight for the 420 drug war news, followed by undercurrents at 10 o'clock and then wide open spaces at 11 o'clock. And now back to story time with Hank Rubischek and Jay Staley, storyteller.
Telling you the truth is not part of this morning's story time on KPFT's Open Journal. I'm your host, Hank Rubischek, with feature teller Jay Staley. Now, Jay, you've got another whopper for us.
Yeah, I want to tell you a story about big men, a big man of Houston. Texas is known as a place of big men with big ideas.
So this is like a folktale,
yep.
Kind of, okay.
And these are folks who take grand action.
Mm-hmm.
A place where Pecos Bill lassoed a tornado and rode it until it was broken and tame. Texas is a place where the governor shoots coyotes on his morning run. And, of course, Houston doesn't lack big names of people who do big acts, especially in the world of business. The Allen brothers dredged the Buffalo Bayou so they could navigate their barges up from the Gulf and bring in materials so they could build this city. And then there's the story of Red Adair, the famous worldwide firefighter was in the business of fighting fires. And those businessmen who might be considered infamous from Houston, people like Enron's Kenneth Lay or M. Allen Stanford. But none of them has ever been bigger than the horizon blocking beaut of a booster named Johnny Business. Johnny was only the biggest man who ever gripped a boardroom table. And that includes all these ex-Houston Oilers and Texas Aggie players who are in public relations and communications. Why, when Johnny was born, he was 15 stories high, and he had a view of Herman Park on two sides. His pa was a profiteering man with an automobile so long. I mean, Hank, that car was so long.
How long was it? Was I supposed to ask that?
That car was so long, it started pulling into the hospital driveway the morning Johnny was born, and to this day, it hasn't completely arrived.
Wow.
His mother was the infamous Ma Bell, a broad-shouldered woman who could hear a million conversations at once and still not change her mind. One day, when he was 3 years old, she took him on out to lunch, and she asked him, "Son, you gonna be a deal-driving man like your daddy?" And Johnny, through a representative, answered, "I have no problem with that." Well, when Johnny Business was a little baby, sitting on his mama's knee, he said, "Government restrictions on my right to make a profit. Gonna be the death of me, Lord, Lord. Gonna be the death of me." Well, you know, it wasn't long before Johnny's pa was reduced to nothing by a big adjustment in the market. And his poor ma got divested. So Johnny quit Junior Achievement, and he headed out on his own. He made himself an attaché case out of an old airplane hangar, and along with his trusty secretary, Babe the Blue Blood, he headed toward the center of H-Town, the hub of Space City. Well, Johnny Business went to the Four Seasons. He rented a penthouse there. It was up so high, he looked down at the sky, and he had to pay extra for the air, Lord, Lord. He had to pay extra for the air. Johnny was such a fast talker, he could sell feathers to a fish, retail. It was not long before he cast his shadow from Beaumont to El Paso. Old Babe had to do a mountain of Xerox and higher than the Transco Tower every morning before breakfast. Johnny had more credit cards than there were things to buy. And he worked it so he could charge the new ones on the old ones, and the old ones on the new ones, and not even your auditor could figure out what was due. And when Johnny took a client out to lunch, he drank martinis out of old water towers from bankrupt railroads. "Here's how," he'd laugh. "Happy hour's here to stay." Well, one day Johnny was visiting a platinum mining operation he was thinking of selling, and when he lay down on his belly and he squinted down the shaft, he didn't like what he wasn't seeing. "It's Monday, Frank," he told his foreman. "Where are all the miners?" Well, Frank took to trembling, so his clipboard started to splinter. "They ain't working, Johnny," he stammered. Some kind of itty-bitty, scraggly old foreign bird told him to go on strike for safer conditions. Well, Johnny's scorn fell like rain on the alkaline earth. "Nothing in life is safe," he roared. "America didn't get built on safety. Give me that shovel, Frank. I'll do the mining myself." Well, Johnny took hold of a gigantic shovel and was about to beat labor and capital both at the same time, when suddenly three little tiny women lawyers who could barely see came up behind him and hit him with a cease and desist order. The first one had once got Christmas tabled till Easter. The second one had taken over hell until the devil could refinance. And the tiniest of the three was also the meanest. She was from the IRS and was so good at tax collecting, she could find pockets on a shadow. The three of them together carried a roll of red tape so thick a man couldn't even think of home without first doing a dozen feasibility studies. Well, now, Hank, this was a pretty tough position for Johnny to be in, and I hate to leave you stranded like a hung jury. But if you want to know the end of this tale by Mark O'Donnell that I have adapted for the occasion, you're going to have to come to the Liars Contest.
All right. All right. That's a great segue, and you are one of the liars who will be there, correct?
That is
that
correct.
That is the story you're telling.
You're going to hear more about the tall tale Johnny business.
I love it. I love it, love it, love it. Now, this great story and many others will be told at the Houston Storytellers Guild Liars Contest, again, on Saturday, April 14th at 7 p.m. at Houston Baptist University's Mauby Theater, 7502 Fondren. HBU has been great to us. They really have. They've been giving us a great, great venue now for years.
That is a nice venue.
It's a beautiful venue.
It's a great
venue.
Place to tell, and it's a fun venue. Place to hear.
And it's the first HBU entrance, and you're going to see the signs. You will make it there. You know, I gave Custer his directions, and I actually made it there. So it's bold and clear, guiding you to your safe, free parking spot. It's $8 for guild members, $10 for non-members, and incredibly cheap for the healthy dose of belly laughs that you're going to certainly endure. We want you to become a member of our fabulous group, of which I'm a proud president. And we meet the third Tuesday of every month at St. Andrew's House on 18th and Heights. Check out our site at www.HoustonStorytellers.org. But get to the Liars Contest, because it's not the truth, but the lies that will set you free and make your soul feel good. Now, the earlier story, I didn't mean to interrupt, but you were saying that it was long. Did you want me to ask how long is it?
That's what I was hoping for.
Okay, good. Yeah, those blank how long is it or how blank is it are kind of interesting. For example, it's really cold outside.
Well, Hank, how cold is it?
It's so cold that even the flashers are showing photos of themselves. Okay. He's really old.
Well, how old is he?
He's so old that when he was in school, they didn't have history. Okay? You like that? Good.
Yeah,
good. Any final words about lying?
You know, I just think it's...
It was an open-ended question
It's fun for... It's fun for an opportunity to lie without feeling guilty about it. And that's what I enjoy about the Liars Contest. And I look forward to having that opportunity.
You know, that truly is an excellent point. You know, the idea of not telling the truth isn't a good thing. But the idea of using it in a creative venue that gives you an opportunity to be wild and imaginative and to use imagery and language and continuity and fun characters is enormously healthy. It's enormously healthy. And I just want to remind anyone out there who's listening, and hopefully you're enjoying the show, that when you read children's stories, any stories, they are filled with wonderful amplifications. In a literal sense of the word, we can call them lies, but what they really are is art incarnate. I wanted to thank you so much, Jay, for your passion and talent in telling the very tallest of tales, I might add. This was fun. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, wishing all of you a very deceptively marvelous weekend, and I want to remind every one of you that it is absolutely never too late to live happily ever after. Right, Jay?
That's right.
One
thanks.
Of those wonderful, wonderful endings. And again, every one of you, get to the Liars Contest. It is a wonderful venue. It is an arena in the round. You can't get a bad seat in the house. It's a cheap date, and you've got to do it. Be there or be enormously square.
Well, thanks for having me on today, Hank.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you all.
Hope to see people out at the contest.
We'll see you all next month. In the meantime, have a wonderfully safe and magnificent weekend.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique source on the Houston airwaves. Visit KPFT.org to support this station. KPFT listener members are welcome to produce an Open Journal. Prospective producers must fill out an Open Journal request form, which is available at our website. The program director welcomes your feedback on every Open Journal. Listener feedback helps KPFT determine what Open Journals are appreciated by the community at large. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 308. Please stay tuned for Undercurrents coming up at 10, followed by Wide Open Spaces at 11. And thank you for tuning in today to Open Journal here on 90.1 KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
It's Saturday.
Hello, my friends. This is Rick Iscariota, along with Cleotis and Buck. Welcome you to tune in every Saturday on KPFT 90.1 FM at 9 o'clock until noon for the Lone Star Jukebox. Roots rock, Americana, country music at its best. Great interviews, and we always have some great giveaways. Join us every Saturday to kick off your weekend on the Lone Star Jukebox at 9 and noon on KPFT 90.1 FM Pacifica Radio.
Who cares?
I am the voice of Pacifica Radio.
Ana sunt Radio Pacifica al KPFT 90.1 FM for Houston. Una sequiza tisini
nukta moja. It's the 420 drug war news. A week ago, the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy held a major conference on drugs. Is the war on drugs failing? One of the speakers was a former policeman, mayor, coroner, and now senator in Canada, Mr. Larry Campbell.
And suddenly I started to see young men dying. Didn't know why. Showed nothing at the autopsy. A little bit of this, a little bit of that, but nothing. And of course, this was the start of HIV. And Vancouver was especially hard hit because Vancouver is a community that embraces everybody. We don't have homophobia. We sort of celebrate the fact that everybody is from... There is no such thing as a Canadian. I mean, I'm from Scotland. My grandparents, you know, people are from China. And we embrace that. But this started a terrific movement in Vancouver. It started in the gay community because of the HIV. The HIV rapidly spread into the intravenous drug user, and we started seeing just an incredible rise in deaths. And as we went along, we were able to recognize what was the cause of this and start treating it. But the having to get involved with the intravenous drug user sort of changed my life. I'd done almost all my drug work in the downtown east side. Now, the downtown east side, for those of you who do watch Da Vinci's Inquest, is where everything is set. And it's probably a 10-block area from Insight, which I'll describe later. So it's about 10 blocks in any direction. And within that area is about 5,000 intravenous drug users. And this downtown east side has always been thus. It was Skid Road, which when we dragged logs in the early days of Vancouver, they call it the Skid Road because they would skid the logs up the main drag and take them to the mill. And it was an incredible community, and it is an incredible community. It's the heart of Vancouver. It's where the acceptance of people goes beyond your comprehension. It's a place where you can go when you're having trouble, and people won't make fun of you. It's where most of our mentally ill went after we shut down the mental institutions. And so it's quite an incredible place. But in the 90s, we started to see an incredible increase in drug deaths. You know, we peaked at probably a couple of hundred in Vancouver. Now, at one point, I remember going to a scene, and there were two people dead. They hadn't even got the needle out of their arm. And I was talking, you know, I was continually talking to the drug squad and police, and none of us knew what was going on.
Many videos featuring Larry Campbell and the other speakers from this conference are available at bakerinstitute.com.